Sirenauts, and welcome to this week's Observations. I am your host, Sovereign Sire. As always, I'm brought to you by the good people at JulieLand.com and the lovely, the wonderful, the talented, the crazy Mr. Richard Avery.
Hello.
And our guest today is Janine Brito.
It's me.
Say hello to everybody.
Hi. That's such a cool fan name, Sirenauts.
I wanted something. Everyone has to have a thing now. They're like team this. Hashtag team this or that.
I think I decided mine are the Burrito Supremes.
Which is amazing. I'm a Burrito
there
Supreme.
There are three. I have four Burrito Supremes. Four fans.
I'm totally, yeah.
Hey, I know that's like only three people listen to this thing, and her and I are two of them, so.
Well, now four this week.
Right. So today's topic is Janine.
It's me?
You're the topic.
Oh, gosh.
Why don't you, I was doing some research, which means I was looking on the internet, and just like in college. And so I know a little bit about you. You're on a show, and you did some monologues I thought were funny.
Oh, thank you.
You know, about the princess's titties, was it?
Oh, yeah, Kate Middleton.
Kate Middleton's boobies.
Nude photos,
That was really funny. My dog's supplying some sex.
Yeah, she is going to town on herself. That's literally, she is licking her vagine and just like, oh.
She gets it from me. You know, nature versus nurture.
You know how to do that?
I actually am an award winning.
What?
I'm an
on
award-
yourself? Like, no. That's what I'm asking. Like,
oh, no,
can
no.
I?
No, no, I was about to sing my praises. I'm like, actually, I'm an award-winning lesbian, but, you know, whatever.
They give out awards? I'm
yeah, there's
even.
Awards. There's I mean, technically, it's for scenes.
Oh, but, I thought you meant, like, generally the community is like,
no, community.
We've heard about your skills.
It's like the neighbors in the building got together.
Yeah.
We voted you best lesbian. That would be good.
No, but I was proud of my girl work. So
as you should, yes, we should all be proud of our work. We should start just like the neighborhood lesbian awards.
That would be pretty
life.
Great.
We'll like take nominations online and then do like a door to door meet and greet and then decide who wins.
Well,
lesbianism.
I used to joke around that it's about like the gay mafia. Like, you know, when every conspiracy is like, you know, it was like 12 angry men, it's the Jews, it's this, it's that. I'm like, no, you've got it all wrong. It's all about the gay mafia.
Yeah.
See,
and everything boils down to gay mafia.
See, like, back in my day, we used to call them, when I first moved to LA, I was asked, you know, I said, I want to be a big time famous photographer. And where I worked at, everybody was gay except me and the owner. So all my friends just looked at me and said, you're on the wrong team. I went, what do you mean on the wrong team? He says, you're on the blue team. You got to be on the pink team.
Like, I like, gotta befriend Dorothy.
You got to be on the pink team. I was like, the pink team? I don't want to be on the pink team.
I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to have to suck a little dick.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, because they were all fucking all the famous people in this town. So I'd always be like, I'm not going to do that. No way. Not gonna happen. And they're like, well, then you're not gonna make it.
How committed are you to this?
My best friend to this day, that's what he used to always say to me. Do you really want to do this? And I'd be like,
still.
Yeah. To this day, 35 years later, he's still saying, you really want to do this?
He just really wants you to suck his D.
You have no idea.
Really, he's like,
you have
listen.
No idea to this day. I always tell him, like, really? After all these years, I'm old. Seriously? I got, you're 60 something. It's like crazy. And he's like, nope.
Yeah, he's like, I've got a few more years before this stops working.
Exactly.
Trust me. You gotta get down here.
Well, maybe for the listeners that haven't gathered it together, Janine is a Lebanese.
Yeah,
is
I am.
Lesbianist? Is that what they're?
Yes, lesbianic.
Lesbianic.
I am.
So, have you been out your whole career, or?
Not like the first year. I started comedy when I was 21, and I came out at 21.
Okay.
And so there were
came out publicly or like to your family?
Myself.
Just oh, yes.
I came out
denial up until 21.
Yeah, pretty much. And so there was like maybe 3 months when I was doing stand up where I wasn't even out to myself, and then after I came out, I think I waited like another.
Can I ask
nine
how
months.
You figured out you were?
I always knew, I knew from the moment I was like 4 or 5 that I felt differently about women. But I was in a super religious, conservative family. My dad is Cuban, and we were in Miami. I went to, like, Pentecostal church. And then my mom's side of the family is from
Alabama. Was that, like, you have to, like, wear the long skirts and, like, the...
No, nothing like that. Speaking in tongues in church, but...
Okay, yeah.
Like that sort of thing.
Okay.
But, and then my mom's side of the family was from Alabama, and, like, small-town Alabama. So... I think just from that, I was like, oh, this isn't okay to be. And then, so I just kind of swallowed it down. And like, everyone asked, like my dad when I was 12 was like, Janine, do you like boys? And I was like, yeah, of course I do. Shut up. I'm trying to watch TV. Like,
right,
and then like friends, parents would ask and friends would kind of like say something. And then finally, senior year of college, I was having dinner with my best friend, Danielle. And like in the middle of the conversation, she was like, you're not straight. She just like blurted it out. And finally, after like five times, I was like, yeah, you're right. Like I finally was just like, yeah, why am I bullshitting?
Because I figured out, I came out when I was, well, I was kind of forcibly outed. I came out when I was like 15.
Mm.
But it was like, I was kind of a similar thing where, you know, like I had the feeling that something's different. You know, you feel this way about women. Like I knew what a lesbian was and I knew that I felt attracted to women, mm-hmm. but somehow I didn't.
Had you been?
I didn't put the two together. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get that one was the other. And yeah. I had, like, playing doctor with friends, and but like kind of way later than you. You know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. like when well
I
beyond
never did that.
Like well
up.
Beyond when people should like have a sense of a personal privacy and space. Playing doctor, convincing other girls this was something they See. Would like to do. But like by the time I was like into high school, it was. Because boys kept trying to ask me out, and I was just, like, repulsed by the idea of a boy being anywhere near me in a sexual way. And so I kind of, by the time I was 15, it was, like, I went to a performing arts high school, so mm-hmm. there were women.
Who were out.
Who were out that were, like, kind of hitting on me, and I was into, you know, I was, like, very intrigued and fascinated. So, like, I figured it out relatively early.
Uh-huh.
So I'm always kind of, like, when I encounter someone that, like, was in their 20s before they came out to themselves... Like, it always trips me out because I feel like...
I mean, I think I was pretty, like, I had sexual thoughts, but to the outside world, I was pretty asexual.
Right.
Like, I was like, oh, I'm just everybody's friend and stuff like that. And then I was very religious until I got to college. And then I think even though I had left religion at 18, it was so ingrained in me that even then it just took me a while to kind of, like... work through that stuff and admit it to myself.
Right. It's like when everybody in my house went to Catholic school and I was till like eighth grade. I got out at fifth grade. And to this day, my parents believe all my problems, like it's because you weren't in Catholic school long enough.
And you're like, I have less problems.
And they were like, you're going to hell. Like, I won't care. I don't care. But like, I understand what you're saying. You still have to like, it takes time to wash all that
totally.
Thought, guilt, whatever you want to call it.
Totally. That's interesting. Everyone that I know who's gone to any amount of Catholic school is no longer Catholic.
Oh, for sure. I remember as like first grade, they're telling you this story about Adam and Eve or Noah's Ark. And I'm sitting there in first grade going, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And so every year was getting worse and worse and worse. And so my parents.
Because it gets more stringent.
Yeah. And then my parents I questioned everything. To this day, I question everything. I always tell people like, it's my thing. I don't believe anybody or anything. But it was just so annoying. And like I said, it took me years to kind of get that shit.
To unbrainwash yourself a little bit.
Yeah. And then I didn't get my confirmation, but everybody else did. And so I was just all like.
So and they your bring soul's just been open.
Yeah.
Like unsealed. Exactly. Like this whole time.
Exactly.
Just like a petri dish. Just like collecting every fucking sin there is out there.
And I worship Satan.
Like, yeah. I mean, oof.
My problem is I always say I worship girls. You know, that's probably my problem.
And now, now you have this site with girls, their vaginas.
Everywhere. Exactly. I love girls. What can I say?
So were you doing stand-up by the time you were a senior in college? Were you, or was that
I started right after.
Right
after.
What did you major in? Like, what was your...
I majored in marketing and international business with a minor in visual communications.
I was waiting for you to say women's studies.
No, I went to business school.
Good for you. That's smart.
My first girlfriend was the youngest graduate from the MBA program when I was in high school. And she was like,
what?
Yeah.
Dated that much of an older lady?
Yes.
Whoa.
She was fucking very good looking.
How much older was she than you, if you don't mind?
I was 15 and she was 20. She was the youngest... entered in there. So she was 21. 21 or
that's strange.
She was like, because I met her at a punk show.
Okay.
So she kind of came up to me and just basically was like, picked me out of a crowd, and she was like the most popular girl. She was bisexual. She was the most popular girl
in the whole scene.
In the whole scene. Yeah. Like stunning, fucking stunning. And I was very awkward and kind of pudgy and like had just cut my, I had blonde hair. I'd just cut it like chin length and I had this like black hair. And I was like trying, you know, like trying to be mysterious or interesting. And she like found me out of a crowd and was like, "You're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in my life." And I was like, "What?
You're like, I don't want to wait."
Yeah. And it was, and then she took me in her car in her Dodge Dart and she just started making out with me. And it was like, I had never kissed anyone before. I mean, I had never.
You were living the dream.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It was kind of, and like, so I had this older girlfriend that would like pick me up from school. And everyone was like, "Your girlfriend drives is hot." like wearing like vinyl outfits and like all this stuff, like super punk. Super hot, and she'd like roll up, pick me up from school, and she'd have like a six pack of beer like waiting for me and like take me back to her house. And I like, but she was very like punctilious.
Isn't this illegal?
Oh, I'm sure it's totally illegal. Highly illegal. I was like in a little schoolgirl uniform, drinking beer, smoking cigarettes, doing my homework while my girlfriend was eating my ass. You know what I mean?
But
she made sure I did my homework.
That's good.
You know, and my mom was so relieved. I could stay the night anytime I wanted because at least I wasn't having sex with boys. So,
no one could get preggers.
Yeah, she was. I was like, gladly take her, please.
I am the first woman in my family either side to not get pregnant before the age of 21. And when I came out, everyone was like, "Oh, that's why."
So like, I could just see on your 22nd birthday, woo!
Yeah. They were like, "We finally got one through youth."
Exactly. Oh my God, that's a crazy.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Is it? I just mean like, no, that everyone has been pregnant before 21. Like that's.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like my parents and it's a different generation. People are having kids younger, but yeah. I could
imagine if you were 20 in your family, coming home, a girl coming home going like, "I'm 20, you know, 21 year old going, I'm pregnant." And everybody's going, "Yeah, whatever. Okay." Like, that's the normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty, okay, cool.
Of course you
are. Here's the phone number of the doctor. We'll talk. Let us know when the baby's due and we'll go from there.
Well, I mean, like, it's a cultural thing because I grew up in the town I grew up in is predominantly Hispanic. And in high school, when girls would get pregnant, it wasn't necessarily like the family wasn't necessarily upset about it. It was like a celebration. The value of like family sort of like superseded any other kind of like societal.
Totally. And it
whatever,
was the same,
you know,
with my family. It's like Cubans and then small town rednecks who like, there's not a whole lot to do. So what you do is you find somebody and start a family and you raise kids. And
yeah.
So
get on welfare.
Yeah. Oh, our family works at the Marshall Durbin Chicken Factory. That's the factory everyone in the town works at.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
How
that's
fun.
Small. So where in Florida are you from?
Miami.
Okay. That's kind of awesome though, because it's like you have the whole kind of cultural intersect of like.
Yeah. Well, I moved away when I was 10.
Okay.
And then lived all over the place.
Do you live here in LA now?
Yes. I moved here in January.
And you're
in New
York?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I'm an LA baby.
You were in
total
New York
rookie.
Before?
Mm-hmm. Okay. For 2 years. And then before that, I was up in the Bay Area.
Which part of the Bay Area?
I was in Rockridge in the East Bay.
Okay. Know it well.
Yep.
So
it's a cute neighborhood. But you had a cool high school experience, though.
Yes, I went to a performing arts high school. So
yeah, so that's always full of. Did you have a pretty you left Catholic school in fifth grade?
Yeah, school for me. I always try to tell people what I was kind of lucky because I was the. I have two older brothers and older sister, and I was the youngest to get through this school. So we.
So you had like a reputation.
Kind of like I knew everybody. I never went to class for 4 years. Honestly, especially since I turned 16, I had a car. Like, I never went to school. I just went either. I had keys to the dark room and the school alarm system, so I could do anything I wanted when I wanted.
Oh, that's great.
School was just social for me. It was just a social thing, and I knew the teachers, and they knew me. The principal and I played golf on the weekends with the teachers, so they would yell at my. Dad tell him he was never in class this week. My dad said, "I don't care." And I just, so it was just like social.
And you did fine grade wise. Like
no, horrible. I would have
really?
I would have flunked out if I didn't know them. They would have flunked me. Instead, they just gave me C's just because they knew me. and I had a good golf game. Huh. But like, to me, it was all social. But I grew up in the barrio in the hood. I always tell people I didn't know I was white and I didn't know white people until I moved to LA.
And it sounds like you already knew you wanted to do photography.
I started shooting pictures when I was 10. Business cards. Right then and there.
Wow.
I knew because I like
his
girls.
Business cards from when he was like, it's crazy. Like, you're like, a 10 year old.
I was looking at Playboy at 5 going, yeah, I want that. whatever it is.
I thought that.
Yeah.
My dad got me a subscription to Playboy when I was a teenager because I said,
you guys have such cool.
Because
I subscribed to it. My
dad was an artist and he was a graphic artist. Mm-hmm. And so he had a subscription to Heavy Metal magazine and stuff like that. And like, when I came out, he was like, oh, I knew because you were a little girl and you were just fascinated with like images of women and whatever. But when I was a teenager, I didn't want to tell my mom. And so they were separated. And so I just went to my dad. I was like, so I want to like, I like women. And can you just get me a subscription to this? Can I have Playboy? And he did.
Yeah, I was looking at Playboy. <He did. laughs> But it was different times for me. And it was, you know, it was a lot different too, though, than it is nowadays. I mean, nowadays you see everything. Back in my day, you just saw a big muff. So you didn't know what was underneath the big muff. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just went, oh, whatever's underneath there, it's got to be pretty fascinating. And so... It wasn't until I saw Penthouse that I found out what was underneath all that. You know what I mean? You're like, ah!
And no, it was amazing, right? You saw what was there, and you were like, that's a wonderful thing.
I can honestly say...
It's like the Ark of the Covenant.
I refer to it as the moneymaker, but okay. It's the moneymaker.
Yeah, $1 million on me right now. Exactly. At any given moment.
Mine's more like a bag of Takis and a Diet Coke. that's what I have on me right now.
The scary part is I've seen so much that I really don't even care anymore.
I'm the same way.
You know me, and you know that how many girls I've shot.
I've seen the amount of vagina. Like, if you had told me when I was 15 how much pussy I was gonna see.
I'd be like,
can't wait.
Yeah, or like the kind of pussy.
Oh.
Like that, like porn. It's like the kind, like Veronica Avlov, like this MILF with like huge big titties and like fake, just like I would never encounter that person in nature, and know how to approach them and then get them to fuck me. But because of my job, we get booked together.
Right.
It's like for me, the thing about porn is more like who, like I get paired with people that I just would never even see them, know to approach them. Like none of, you know what I mean? So it's almost like, so it's more like the kind of women I have access to is like what's surprising to me. It's sort of like,
do you mean like you're cast out of your like natural inclination?
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah. And so it's like I said, it's like someone, say a performer like Veronica Avlov, who's like just like very glamorous and fake boobs and all, like, that's not the crowd I run with. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, like I would never even be in the same room with this kind of person.
Do you think that working with different types of people that you would naturally hang out with, has that affected your personal, like when you go out, do you find that you're more open to like, oh, I can totally see myself hitting on this person?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. For sure. I think in a lot of ways too, it's the job, it's very good at kind of teaching you what you like and don't like about sex versus intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have great sex all the time on camera. And so it's kind of like, it's like this weird thing that it's like winnowing like the wheat from the chaff. It's sort of like when I'm in my personal life, I'm much more interested in whether or not I have like emotional chemistry with someone before I'll even go on a second date. So now I'm more of a prude. If I go on dates, I won't kiss someone until like the third date. Because I don't even want to get
started.
You want
to make sure there's that like spark.
Yeah, like I don't even want to get started with that shit until like I feel like, like as a human being, like I'm
connect.
Into them
yeah.
or whatever. So in that way too, it's kind of, it's been interesting.
Hmm.
But tell me more about stand-up. It's like, stand about me.
I started out in St. Louis. That's where I went to college.
Okay.
And another reason why I was in the closet for a while is because I was like doing small town shows in like Cornfield, Illinois and stuff like that. And so even after I came out on stage, I would do a thing where I would wait. I would like do half of my set. So I'd be up there for 15, 20 minutes. And then I would say something and be like, by the way, I'm a lesbian, to like kind of win him over before I was like, surprise, I'm the devil. Like that,
that
like,
makes sense, though.
And it worked. Like, I've always dressed pretty tomboyish, but I think back then it was a little bit more on the fence. So, like, people wouldn't be shocked when I said it, but they would kind of, like, give me a chance as a person first.
Right.
And so that was the thinking behind that. And then I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area after doing it for a couple years in St. Louis, just because I wanted a bigger town. And life on the road is hard. It's very brutal. Lonely. It's very scary.
I was
going to
ask, have you been a road comic? Or are you now
not
a road
now.
Comic?
I mean, I'll do, like, tour legs, but it's not how I make my living. Just because the first 2 years when I was out there, I'm sure it's different now, but yeah, it was like I would be stressed out traveling, and then I'd get to a hotel and have to eat gas station food or like shitty restaurant food. And then after shows, sometimes like men would corner me in the bar, and like I had guys like whisper stuff in my ear, like, I love lesbians, and I'd be in a town where I didn't know anybody. And so I was like, this is not for me. I want to be in a city where, like, I'll know the comedy community. So I feel like here, even if someone stepped to me and said some terrible stuff, the other comedians in the room would be like, oh, we need to go over there and help Janine.
Yeah. Did you like the Bay Area?
I love the Bay Area.
Yeah.
It's a great. Lot. Yeah.
It's my favorite.
Mine too.
It's, I think San Francisco is amazing. Oakland's amazing. There's so much in the Bay Area these days. I moved away 35 years ago, but it's still pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So why did you move to LA? Like, I feel like did you know, like, what was the moment that you went into stand up where you're like, I'm not going to be a finance manager. I'm going to go do stand up. Like, what was that?
Well, my parents kind of made me major in business. They were paying for my school, and they were like, well, if we're going to pay for it, you need to study this. My dad was a painter, and I was originally going to do that. And then when I decided not to do that, they were like, okay, now that you're not doing the family tradition, do business. So I was a little always creative and knew I didn't want to do business. And then I just had always been fascinated by it and did an open mic, like towards the end of senior year. And the first time I did a mic, I was like, this is absolutely, this is what I want to do. And I was awful and terrible for so long. But I still knew, like, even when I had a shitty show and felt like garbage, I was still like, I can't see myself making a living off of anything but this.
Yep.
So that's sort of why I've stuck with it.
It's like you get hooked and you're like, good, bad, or ugly, I'm still going to do this. Doesn't matter.
Even when I do bad, I'm like, I got to get on stage again just to, like, now I need the fix even more. Like, I got to have a good show.
Yeah. Yeah, I met so many people like that. I think in the creative world, you find that little spark gets lit, and then you're like, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Love it.
So when you were on Totally Biased, has your goal been to be a stand-up only, and then these other things are like sort of things that come along and you take them for a moment? Or do you have, like, Sarah sort of, like, she's always wanted to be a TV host, mm-hmm. Sarah Schaefer.
When I started stand-up, I don't think I had a long-term plan. I think sort of as these other things have come up, I've really enjoyed them a lot. Like, I love writing for TV. And now that's sort of been like, I want to get back into a writer's room, because that's, it's like you're in a room with a bunch of people and like brainstorming constantly and topping each other. And there's this like really electric energy between people. And then at the end of it, you get to see something that you know is going to be on TV, and everyone's going to see an end product that you were there for, right, for the whole process of. So I think I'll always do stand up on the side, but definitely for making money, I would like to delve more into television stuff. And I did acting in college as well, and that's not my main thing, but it is something I enjoy, as long as it doesn't take up all my time.
And they give you a nice trailer.
Yes.
Yes. So how long were you doing stand-up before you started to experience, kind of, before you were able to transition into doing writing and, like...
Totally Biased was my first TV writing job. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was 8 years that I was doing stand-up before I got a...
So were you 8 years on the road, or were you kind of...
On and off on the road. I was on the road for the first 2 years, and then I just kind of stayed in the Bay Area for 4, and then, like, right before I got booked on the show, I like started going out on the road again. So a couple years after that.
Is the comedy scene in San Francisco like as, because the comedy scene here in LA is just like massive.
It's not as massive. The thing I love about San Francisco is it's really supportive. And I think because of the history of San Francisco of being kind of a town of freaks, audiences there are like, you can do whatever you want and we're going to give it a chance.
I can't agree more.
Yeah.
It's San Francisco. It's more accepting.
Totally.
And it's more.
And people are more excited by something potentially going off the rails.
And you think about all the great comedians that have come from the Bay Area. It's the same thing with music. I always used to tell people in the music world, growing up in the Bay Area, it was always so supportive.
Totally.
There's all these great bands and stuff like that. And it's the same thing here in LA. I always say it doesn't matter what music, comedy, acting, porn. There's not the supportive thing. In LA, it's like if you're in a band and you're playing on stage and there's a bunch of other bands in the audience, they're just sitting there going, we can do better. We can do better.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing with comedians too. Like they're just kind of analyzing you and in their head, they're judging or they're criticizing.
That's such an LA thing. I've been to three comedy shows. I love comedy. Like, I love it. And I go to as many live stuff, like live events as I can. And in LA, it's like the past two or three shows I've been at, I always end up like in front of
a bunch of comics
that are like critiquing the show. And I went to go see, it was Maria Bamford's. She's like trying out material.
At the bookstore.
At the bookstore, which is like literally down the street from my apartment. Oh, so it's like I can walk in, drop in my $5, and like for the next few months, every 2 weeks, she's there.
Awesome.
But so she's trying out new material, and I know everyone by their Twitter handle, but Brandazzles her Twitter.
Brandy Posey.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So she was opening, and she did like she has a great set. And but it was like these people behind me were like just like doing their little like I'm gonna heckle but not really heckle, like I'm like heckling but under my breath so that like everyone around me sees that I'm somehow know more about comedy than the person on stage. And it was just, I'm like, really? Brandy Posey and Maria Bamford, really? Like you're gonna be like,
I never hear stuff like that. I mean, well, I talk shit to my very, very close friends. I think everyone...
But like at the show, like while it's happening.
Not at the show,
like,
not during the show.
No. Yeah, I'm saying like during the show.
And never like within... It's like when I'm having lunch, I'm like, all right, bitch, let's you know, hash it out. But never like, I don't know, that seems rude.
It is so rude. It is rude, but I feel like it's very LA. It's like
this
very
kind of
like,
LA. It was that way. It's that way, like with everything, like bands, music, whatever, comedy. It's just, there's just something about LA is like, it's very, I wouldn't say cutthroat, but like very, it's all for one and all for one.
It's very competitive. Certainly.
Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, you took my job. I was going up for the same job and whatever. And, but it's like everywhere else you go, San Francisco, everybody's just like, yeah, rooting you on. Go do a great set. Yeah. Be great. We want you to be great. Not here. Here they want you to fail so I can take your place.
I think it also, I think here the scene's big enough. Like I feel, I don't hear that a lot. I think because I kind of gravitate towards, I mean, a lot of the San Francisco people who are here now. And I think, like, I know there are certain, you know, subsets of comedy, like a lot of club comics, like bust each other's balls a lot and it's sort of their game. And I'm not really that kind of person. So I think the people I hang out with, we're kind of super friendly, I guess. Like
we're the nice comedians.
Yeah, we're the nice kids.
Well, I try to only have the nice people on.
I could just see you like, that was a really nice show. Very good. Congratulations.
No, but I can tell. Like I only ask
you
people on that. Like have you can tell by people's Twitter by the way they interact. Like you can tell a lot about like their personality.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone I've asked on, I deliberately try to ask on people that are not snarky and weird.
My drafts folder. So what I do sometimes is if I go out and I get tipsy, I will write a tweet that's like super like loving of another comic. Too much to tweet though. So like in my drafts folder, I have one for my friends of like, this person is so supportive and such a ray of light and I love her. And I'm like, I can't put this out. It's like too much.
Oh my God. Kill them with kindness.
And they will die. No, that's the end game.
That's
well, my thing is like, if everyone's DM box could speak, it's like, I don't really do it that much because I'm not really in the community. I'm just a fan, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but like my roommate, is more in that community and I hear stories of sort of like, like within sort of comedy Twitter, writer Twitter, there will be sort of like a figure that people don't like, but like it's only discussed in DM boxes. Like yeah. it's only people's inboxes. Like publicly, everyone's like.
So you think that a lot of a comedians like, walking around out there thinking that everybody loves them, and right? The fact and is, like, I'm like, oh man,
if people's inboxes were suddenly made like public,
they think they're so really funny, yeah. But everybody's going. Not even.
Oh, fuck that guy. Exactly.
Well, I find that too, maybe it's like something about as more and more of our lives have, like, they did a study and they found that people on the internet are far more comfortable expressing anger and rage than are happiness, yeah. Which on its own is like, you're like, okay, whatever. But then if you look at the fact that the amount of time that we spend online has like increased exponentially over the past like 5 years. So if you're thinking like, if you spend... You know, say you spend like 80% of your day connected in some way to your iPhone, like say your Twitter, your Facebook, your email, your texts, like that's 80% of your time where you're at a state of play in an environment where people are far more comfortable expressing anger and rage. So it does start to have like this kind of
effect your own
psyche. like a long-term effect of like people in general just being more negative, pessimistic, angry. Whatever.
Totally. Like, and even the ease of, like, I will overshare so much. Like, like, even using Twitter, I know it's public. I know my name and face is on it. But because it's just on this little box and it's kind of like releasing it out there, it's just in the ether, I forget that I'm broadcasting something to the world. And so it's like, a lot of times it's easy to get into this mindset of like, I just got to get this out there. And then all of a sudden you look back and you're like, wait, people can see this. People know this. And like,
that's why I do it all under another name.
Pseudonym. Like the worst Redditor. That's who you are.
I have like 25 accounts. So I don't do anything at any point. And then I always like to, when people annoy me, I say things. But I don't have to mention their name. And I like always say, let them figure Sub-tweets. It out. Like, well, it's just like passive aggressive tweeting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I always say like if she were to write something that I did piss me off, I wouldn't mention her name. I'd just be like, you're pissing me off. Or like, I'd say something like in a snarky way.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mention the person's name. And then
I've had like, usually like for me, it's like subtweets, backfire. Cause I was involved. I'm involved off and on with this dude. And I had been involved with another dude previously that like went through some weird relationship drama like with some girl and I was bearing witness to it, and I was sort of like, and I tweeted something like, hell is a malignant narcissist that knows how to fuck. And it was meant towards the guy from the past, where it's right. like watching him kind of
and then the current unravel guy was some like...
poor girl's life, you know.
Like, yeah.
And I realized quickly that contemporary person, like, because it's an angsty kind of situation, I'm like, oh, that, like, anyone I'm involved with could think I'm talking about them.
Right.
Because you start to realize that, like, everyone I know is going to go, like, I'm a malignant narcissist. And I certainly know how to fuck. She must be talking about me.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I had, like, a big...
Keep going.
To reality moment with an ex. Like, when we were currently dating... she was suddenly getting all of these like requests and people reaching out from strangers through me. And this is like
weird.
So it was kind of like a moment of like, oh, I need to lock down my private life a little bit. So now I try not to even let people know like who I'm dating or who my family is and stuff like that. Cause it reached a point where she was like, I have 30 requests from guys. Who are these people? And it was like guys that I had met years ago or just people who had seen me at a show went to my stuff and then like delved deeper and tried to reach out to her. And I was like, that's crazy. Too much.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I always tell everybody though, like to me, Twitter is just a business tool. I don't do anything personal on it.
Well, this was Facebook. So now
I had a fan be like, oh, I friended your brother on Facebook. And I was like, so scared. Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not okay.
Like, why?
Like, I don't do any of that stuff. All those to me are business tools. Mm-hmm. You know, personals. I don't need attention. So it's like, I don't know. It's a different generation. It's a different generational.
It's a fact. My ovaries will literally wilt away without the male gaze.
My baby is my clout score. Yeah, that's my child.
Oh, did you just snort?
Yes.
That's adorable.
Oh, leave me alone.
Oh. Well, I think we're running out of time for today. So why don't you tell everyone where they can find you?
You can find me. I do use Twitter mostly, and it is at Janine Brito, JaneBrito. You can be a burrito supreme.
I'm totally burrito supreme. Yay. Do you have a website? Do you have a place where you keep people updated with the...
Yep, JanineBrito.com.
And that's where all your, like, if you're going to go
show
play
shows.
And stuff.
Yep. That's where it is.
Do you have all your merch there?
I don't have any merch.
Can we stalk you there?
Do you have any comedy albums?
No, I'm ironically a bad businessman.
I think it should be not a comedy album. Do you have any comedy downloads? Do you have any digital downloads?
Clips? Any clips on YouTube? Yeah, any hot clips?
Yeah. Other people have clips on me on YouTube. I don't really post a lot. I'm terrible at this business.
I'll be your business manager. Let's get together this because I can sell anything.
Somebody with a business major in marketing and everything. Like, really?
I know.
You're the one I thought would come in here and say, yeah, I've got it all laid out.
No. Yeah. I've rebelled.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you, Sire Knotts. And you know where to find me on Twitter at Sovereign Sire and on my shiny brand new website, ilovesov.com. It's still a baby. It's still new. So I can say it's new. Anyway, it was lovely to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
And we will talk to you later.